This is the Brain Language Podcast.
Welcome to the Brain Language Podcast, where we discuss NLP concepts to help you in your business and your life. I'm Morgan Jobe.
And I'm Susan Stageman. And today we're going to talk about a process. It's really more than a process because it's part of the unified field theory that was developed by Robert Diltz. However, it can be used as a process for change. And so we want to talk about what is it? So if you've never been exposed to any of Robert Diltz's material, that it's a process, but it's also a process that is the smallest amount of information that a person needs to make a change or in the process of any change or healing. So we're going to talk about what it is, what it does, and of course, what it stands for, because SCORE is an acronym. We're also going to talk about, well, how does it work? You know, and give you some basics around that. And then how can you use it and or what can you use it with?
All right. Well, Susan, well, let's just kick it off. Like, what exactly is the SCORE?
Okay. So it's an acronym and it represents symptom, cause, outcome, results or resources, and effect. And those particular pieces, again, it's the minimum amount of information needed in any process of change or healing. You want to know what the symptoms are. Usually your client comes in and they know what's wrong. That's the symptom. Then there's a cause of a symptom. And I may address this a little bit more later in the podcast, because a lot of times people focus on that symptom, and often there's something underneath it that is causing the symptom. So when you try to change the symptom, you don't get lasting change. Then, of course, there's your outcome, very important in any process of change, because you want to know where you're going. You have the resource that can change the cause and update the system so the person can get their outcome. And then, of course, you have the effect, which is the effect of the outcome. What's the long-term results? And that question in the well-formed outcome is, well, what's it going to do for you? What's the long-term effect? So that's the SCORE. It was originally developed by Todd Epstein and Robert Diltz that created this established pathway for change. In fact, when they were teaching trainings, they noticed that students just naturally gravitated to these particular elements. So that's how the SCORE was born. It is part of the unified field theory that Robert Diltz developed, and it's actually nestled between the SOAR, which is state, operator, and result, which is defining the problem state, and the TOTE, which a lot of you may be recognized, is test, operate, text, exit, which is the checks and balances. So what the SCORE is a pathway. It is the pathway that helps the person get from where they are to where they want to go.
So it sounds like they essentially use modeling skills to create this concept.
Exactly. And I find this fascinating that it's between this established pathway that once you know the problem state and the, you know, the results, the changes in the state and the operator, which is linguistic and cognitive and physical influences, that now you need an established pathway to get to where they want to go. And that's what the SCORE provides. It's in and of itself, it's a great piece of change work, but it presents so many more opportunities for people or facilitators to help a person get from where they are to where they want to go.
So how does it work exactly?
Okay. So it works with spatial anchors. And for those of you that aren't aware of spatial anchors, you set up anchors on a floor. You set up psychogeography so that you have different places that represent that particular experience. So when they step into the symptom, they are all about the symptom. They can describe the symptom. They can embody the symptom. In other words, one of the things that I love about the score is that as a facilitator, I can get very clear, definable behavioral cues, very definable calibration with each of these particular anchors. As you know, anchoring is one of the, I call it a hinge pin, that holds the processes of change in NLP together. All NLP processes of change represent anchoring because it changes our perception. It kicks us up to a higher logical level and helps us change our perception of what's going on.
And it you'll see them physiologically shift, you know, there's their stance, their breathing, etc.
Exactly. And it's much more easy, it's easier to calibrate when a person's standing up and actually stepping into the space and stepping out, as opposed to just sitting somewhere, you know, in a room, in a chair. It also helps the client get more in touch with the neurological wiring that accompanies each of these particular states. So in the symptom, they'll step in and describe what's going on for them. And I often, this is something I've added over the years, because I work with a lot of belief issues, is that I ask them, well, this person with this symptom, what do they believe? What do they believe about themselves, about the world? Sometimes that's great information, not always, but I like to ask it in case we want to go in that direction. So they step into the symptom, and you can basically ask a person, okay, what's the symptom? What is the symptoms of the problem? These are the way they feel, how they behave, lower logical level things, what environment they find themselves in. Then there is the outcome. You know, what is the outcome or desired goal? Now, this to me is so helpful, especially when I'm working with a client who is not really in touch clearly with what they want. We want clients to be able to demonstrate through their behavioral cues what that outcome is. And so it'll accompany all kinds of voice changes, color changes, behavioral cues, eye patterns that you don't always get when you're sitting somewhere in a chair. But when I have a client step in, I can actually model them into an outcome state that represents something different than the symptom. You know, Morgan, I know that you have some experience with this, where a person will step into the symptom, you know, and they're just, you know, blah, 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 blah. Their shoulders are all, you know, humped over, and their voice is very low emotional tone. And then they step out. And I actually, before I have them step into the outcome, I have them, it's almost like a circle of excellence, where I have them visualize in a way what they're going to look like, sound like, and feel like when they've achieved that outcome. And so then they step in, but I don't see any changes. And so then I have them step out, and let's rewind that a little bit. Is that how it's really, you're going to have this great outcome, but it looks to me very much like, and sounds to me very much like a symptom. Yeah. And so, see, that's how I know whether a person is really embodied that outcome. Is, do I see it in the spatial anchor? And so I'll help them model an outcome, you know, behaviorally. You know, people can talk about outcomes all the time. Once their body gets it, now we've got traction.
Yeah, I've found that when, you know, exploring symptoms or problems or issues, whatever you want to call it, with people in various contexts, a lot of times there's a hyper focus on the actual problem to the point that like you just mentioned, when you ask them, okay, well, what do you want or what is the goal? They don't actually know. And maybe that's kind of why they have difficulty like embodying it, because they never really thought about it. Like, what will I feel like? What will I be doing? What will I look like if I actually get what I want?
Exactly. And so spending a little time here, really helping them capture behaviorally what it is that they want, so that they can feel the difference when they eventually step back into the symptom for the cause, you know, so we're going to go underneath the symptom, they can feel the difference immediately in between those two experiences. Whereas before they didn't. And I agree with you. A lot of times people, they don't know, or they have a vague idea. And of course, we've talked about this before in the podcast, the outcome and how important it is and how important to get that language right. But even more than that is to get the neurological wiring to work in the body that will connect the person with the outcome so that they have definable evidence that they really have it. If you feel the same way and you're holding your body the same and you have the same facial expression as a symptom, how do you know that you really got what you wanted when the outcome is the same? So, yeah, you know, the names and the faces and the places may have changed, but you're still the same person. Well, we know how that goes, right?
Right.
Wherever you go, there you are. So the person really didn't get what they wanted. And that's what why people, I think, question themselves. Well, is this really what I wanted? You know, I thought it would be a different color or size, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I mean? I'm just being more diagrammatical there. But oftentimes it's because the person didn't really embody the outcome. They didn't really step into it and really feel it and demonstrate it through their behavioral cues, as well as being able to verbalize it. So then, of course, there's the effect of the outcome. That's the long-term effect. And, of course, you would ask, a longer-term effect. This is the goal or reaching the outcome through time. You know, reaching an outcome is one thing. You know how this is, Morgan. You set a goal and you reach the goal, and then that's it. That's, you know, there's nothing after that. And most of our outcomes and goals, you know, financial, relationship, health, and well-being, etc., they're all through time processes. So what that effect does is it helps people create that outcome to be through time.
So it's kind of like looking at, all right, if I get this, how will my life be different moving forward?
Yes, yes.
And how will that affect other people around me? And is that necessarily a good or useful thing?
Yes, exactly. And oftentimes the effect, it's the same question in the well-formed outcome, what's this going to do for me? It's change for what purpose? I mean, why am I doing this? And what value is it attached to? And oftentimes I will drill that effect down to a universally accepted value, peace, love, freedom. I don't like that word, but, you know, some type of being free to make choices. Choices is another one.
Like autonomy.
Autonomy. Yeah, that's a good way of saying that. Thank you. So once we have those, all those taken care of, then we can go back to the symptom. And from there, and they're going to feel a big difference. Now they've been in the outcome and the effect. They go back to the symptom. Wow, they can really feel it. And, you know, if you have rapport with your client, which, gosh, I hope you do, you can feel that too. You'll feel them just kind of sink into that symptom and feel the energy kind of bottom out for them. And then from the symptom, they want to step into the cause. And I just tell them, just from your deepest wisdom, what causes those symptoms? And I suggest the first thing that comes to mind, because that's got to come out of the unconscious before the conscious mind starts to edit it. And a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times people think of things that they haven't thought of in years. And so once we have a cause, then we can choose resources to add to that cause, because we're going to change the cause. We're not going to change the symptom. Once the cause has changed with the addition of the resources, then the symptom will update itself. And of course, the outcome will be enriched as well as the effect. So it's a nice little process. It also, by the way, Morgan, works really well with kids. You have to, you know, children, I don't work with any child under the age of 7. However, you know, some of the younger kids, you know, they're still in that, you know, let's play a game state.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that this helps them. It's easier to talk with them, easier to have rapport. They're engaged more deeply in the process where, and it, I just tell them, we're going to play a little game and we're going to have these little circles and you're going to step into the circles and
mm-hmm.
tell me how it is and blah, blah, blah. And it just works perfectly. Where some of the other processes in NLP, I think they're too adult. I mean, some of them can be used, but I think that the score really helps, especially a child. They don't have a lot of, you know, they don't have 40 years of beliefs heaped up on, you know, some behavior. They just have some really, some of it's serious. I'm not going to say mild things, but oftentimes they can change once and they never have to revisit it. It's really quite amazing.
Do you find that they sometimes also, because of their inexperience in life, maybe don't have some of the language to
exactly.
even That's articulate exactly what their experience is, but they know what it feels like. And when they step into it, they can connect to it.
That is it. That's exactly it. So I think it, for people that work well with kids, the other thing I like about the scores, because you're using spatial anchors for this, you don't have to touch a person. Now you can, and I believe in the original process by Dilts, you anchor the shoulder with the resource and help them step in. But you don't really have to do that. It will transfer if the anchors are set correctly and there's no contamination of them. So I think that really helps. You know, sometimes people don't, you know, like to be touched or don't want to be touched. And so I think this is, you know, spatial anchors are always good for that. So anyway, okay. What do we want to talk about next with this?
Well, I'm curious, like what kind of things have you used it on in your practice?
Okay. So I'll tell you one thing that I've used it on. And actually this years ago, someone did it for me with stage fright. Mm-hmm. And being uncomfortable speaking in front of people. And believe it or not, I had that at one time. The miracle of NLP sits right here. So, but I had somebody who was familiar with the score run, or they did the score. I didn't say, hey, do a score with me, because I didn't even know what to ask for. But they did that. And the resource, you know, remember the presupposition that we all have all the resources necessary to make any change that we want to make. And so it really worked. It worked right off the bat. And I was able to stand up in front of a large number of people and introduce myself and that sort of thing. So that's one way. I often use it, especially with a new client, to get them up, moving around. It helps them if they're nervous or they don't really understand what's going on. They can start working on something right away. It seems to be very logical to them how all of this works. So I really love it to set up the process. And actually, you can just go ahead and add the resource. And oftentimes that's enough, especially at a behavioral level. Sometimes if some of the issues, oh, by the way, for the outcome, I also ask them, what does this person believe about themselves or the world? So I ask in the symptom and I ask in the outcome, because they should be different beliefs, obviously. I mean, mm-hmm. You can't have an outcome and still believe what you believed in the symptom. They're mutually exclusive. So I will have them define that. But let's say, for instance, we are dealing with a situation that's going to go at a higher, you know, the cause is a higher logical level. So I use the score to springboard other processes. So if the cause is at a certain logical level, then I might use a re-imprinting. I will take them from the cause and just walk them back on their timeline to the earliest time that that happened, or to an imprint or an impasse, obviously. Sometimes it's trauma, a trauma-based cause. Okay, we can do eye repatterning, or we can literally do a trauma process. And, you know, we can also do a 9-point grid to establish a resource. It's a little overkill, but depending on, you know, what the issue is and what the person is working with and who you're working with, I think can be important. You can also do reframing, a belief change. You can do timeline. So all kinds of things that you can launch from the cause. And then once you do the process, you come back, step into the cause and ask them, well, what's here now? And if you have had a successful tote, then you've operated and now you're going to test again, that cause should be different. And I would say almost 100% of the time people go, I don't even remember what it was. And then we'll test the symptom, what's there, and then we'll go into the outcome and notice how it's been enhanced and the effect, which is in some respects a future pace. So those are the kinds of things. I get very creative with the score because it can be a great springboard, especially if someone I'm working with for the first time. And it helps me gather information as much as it helps the client define the different areas, you know, of the problem and then the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think it's very useful to help a person establish a very clean, clear outcome and make sure that it's in the body that they're demonstrating. I think that's one of the best things that a person can do to help a person get what they want. But you were talking earlier about something that you use in coaching, which I thought was really interesting. So go ahead and talk about that, Morgan.
Yeah, as I mentioned, when we're coaching someone, which is, I find it's a similar process to NLP, although it's maybe not as directive.
Mm-hmm.
And you're moving a person from where they are to some other place where they want to be, their outcome. And a lot of approaches have a way of structuring that conversation so that you hit the important points and help someone get set up to change or achieve or do what they want to do. And one of the common ones is that's used, and it's a great way to organize your conversation. It's called GROW, and it stands for what's the goal, the resource, the outcome and obstacles, and then what they will do. And so if you're having your conversation, you're touching on what is the goal, you know, what do you have that's going to help you achieve that? What particular obstacles might be in the way, and what's the actual, you know, outcome? You can kind of go into a kind of a longer term effects of that, but also will do. Okay. So between now and then, what are you going to do? And it's a great process, but I actually use the score more often because I think it's more comprehensive and it really gets to the issue better. And so instead of, you know, symptom, it might be more like phrased like what's the situation?
Sure.
And in that is they encapsulate whatever symptoms they have that represent the challenge, the problem.
Right.
And
the symptom is just where are you now?
Right, right. Like sometimes I ask them, so what's the situation? What's going on? And the other thing that it can be really useful for is not only dealing with a problem, but for actually enhancing enhancing a resource or a capability. So if there's something that they're doing well and they want to actually do it even better, you can say, well, what is the situation? And it's not really a problem. It's what they're doing well. And then find out, well, what causes you to do that so well?
Yeah, good.
And then as you start to explore it and pick it apart, you can see, well, if you did more of this or more of that, would that produce an even better outcome? And so it can be to enhance a good situation as well as solve a problem. But it's a very, very clean way of structuring a pure coaching conversation.
Yeah, that's good. I also like this score because it addresses when you're working with somebody who does have a problem, is wanting to move to an outcome, it deals with the cause.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years, I've done a lot of work with, you know, alcohol addictions and other addictions with clients, and they, you know, they want to quit drinking. Well, that kind of launches us into the unified field, which I don't want to get into right now, but you know, there's this idea that I drink or I don't drink, which is part of the problem, part of the way they state it. However, it does deal with the cause of the symptom, the cause of the problem, because that's what people are focusing on. But there are oftentimes deeper implications, things that they're not necessarily aware of, that until that's addressed, the symptom isn't really going to go away, even if it's just for a little time. It's one of the reasons that problems keep coming back, or addictions keep coming back, or, you know, weight issues keep coming back, is because it's not really addressed at a cause level. And that's work. I mean, it's work to sometimes get to the cause, and sometimes it just doesn't feel very well. And when you're there, but the outcome is, and the ability to create and maintain that outcome through time, so outweighs the, you know, few minutes of uncomfortable feeling that we may be experiencing.
You mentioned, you know, weight loss. I know that that's something that a lot of people experience a challenge with sometimes. And I think that's a really good example of how frequently we or society at large tend to focus on a problem and then just slap a solution on it without really understanding the cause. And never like, well, you need to do this, like do this diet or do this, without actually exploring, well, what's the reason that you're have a problem with weight or whatever the problem is?
Right.
And they just assume that if they just go out and get set solution, that that will work for them.
Right. And yeah, normally a problem state like that is multi-layered. It doesn't just come out and say, okay, this is the cause of my problem. And it's all very interesting. And I'm sure that people out there listening to this podcast who do work with people have come across this over and over and over again, where people just want to look at, how can I stop doing this or start doing something else? And that's going to be for another podcast. I anticipate that sometime this year, I will talk about the unified field and how it's a concept in NLP that Robert Diltz developed, very much like the Albert Einstein did for physics. And that in the unified field, it's the field of all possibilities. And in that unified field is the answer or the solution to a lot of the problems, but they're at different logical levels. So I think we're moving off the score a little bit, but I think it's helpful for people to understand that when someone comes in and says, you know, I want to lose weight, or I can't stop eating or something, you know, their solution is just to, you know, I eat, I don't want to eat. Well, first of all, for a human being, that's not going to work very well, because we can survive and not smoke, but we can't survive and not eat. So eating is part of the cycle of life, so to speak, to keep life going. However, approaching problems like that without looking at the deeper issues, you tend to get in a loop where, you know, they just bounce back and forth between two loops. And part of that is because they're only dealing with the symptom. The other part is because they're not looking at, you know, I love the score because it is a system. It's a system or a model for looking at the process of change rather than bouncing back and forth between organized, not organized, you know, drink, not drink, eat, not eat, whatever the issue happens to be. But going for the underlying causes often will kick you into higher logical levels. And then you address the real issues and person does change because it's no longer who they are. That's one of the things that I love about the score. It is, in some respects, its own little unified field.
Yeah. Well, having been through your classes with you and getting exposed to this many, many times, this approach, this concept of the score, I think I eventually internalized it.
Yes.
And I found that when if I've solved some issue and I go back and look at it, like what I did to actually solve the issue, that I unconsciously did the score in many cases.
Yes. Oh, absolutely.
And sometimes I use it intentionally, of course, too. But it's interesting to look back and say, oh, I cleared that up. And how did I do that? You essentially just check off. I hit all the main points of the score.
Yeah, exactly. The other nice thing about the score, I think, is you can really run this on yourself. You know, it's not, you just have to be very deliberate and defined, obviously, because you have to go meta to the process. But it's an easy process to run on yourself. And instead of just having something out in the air, oh, you know, I'd like to be able to do this or blah, 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 you actually focus on each individual part of the process. So you create a system rather than just, you know, bouncing back and forth between, you know, change, no change, so to speak, trying to solve a problem at the same level that created it. As of course, Einstein said that you can't do that, basically. So I do encourage people to do, if you're not familiar with the score, to see if you can do a little due diligence or talk to someone they know in NLP. I teach this in my practitioner program because I think it's a useful process for change. And I think it's one of the most effective ones, actually.
All right. Well, anything else about the score that comes to mind?
Not today. I want this to sink in. So let's do a quick recap.
Okay.
Now, we've talked about, you know, what the score is. It's a model that it creates a pathway from where a person is to where they want to go. And it sits between the SOAR, which is the state, operator, and result, and the TOTE, which is test, operate, test, exit. The score is a process or a pathway for change. And we talked about what the score does. Well, it's the minimum amount of information to produce a change. And the letters stand for the symptom, cause, outcome, resource, and effect. And what it does is it allows a person to create a pathway between the present state, which is the symptom, to a desired state, and it uses the wisdom of the body to create that change, which is one of the reasons that I love. So symptoms, the most noticeable and conscious aspects, the cause, is what's down underneath it, what maintains it, what creates it. The outcome is our goal or desired state. The resource is what is going to help transform the cause and therefore transform the symptom. And the effect is, of course, the long-term effect, the purpose or the motivation behind what the outcome presents. And so the basic questions are, what's the symptom? What is the cause of the symptom or the problem? What's the desired outcome or goal? What would be the longer-term effect of the goal? Of reaching the goal, what's the resource that would help address the cause, and what resource would help address the outcome. The score was developed by Robert Dilts. And when we talked about all kinds of ways that we can use it, Morgan uses it in coaching, and we can use it with ourselves, or we can use it with other processes. Like I explained before, we can use it to help, especially with a new client, help them establish a really clear, clean outcome and make sure that it's in the body and they're demonstrating it. So that's the score. And we're starting out the new year with it. in a way so that people can be mindful of the model and the process that it takes to get from here to there, from present state to desired state. I did want to mention before we hop off this time that I am going to start another mastery in NLP this month, actually in January. And it is a class that includes both practitioner and masters. It's built on the DILTS neurological levels model. So, you know, we'll start in environment, move all the way up into identity, and how to use strategies to change what we do. So that's coming up pretty soon. I'm pretty excited about it. For those people overseas, they can take it on Zoom. I am, however, going to be in the classroom too. So it'll be fun. I've done this before with the Brain Language Academy. However, I'm going to do it with this class now. So there will be people in the classroom and people on Zoom. It's actually really interesting doing it that way.
Interesting.
So Morgan, thank you. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Morgan is launching a new endeavor. We'll probably talk about that later when he's ready. It sounds pretty exciting, actually, Morgan. So I'm sure our listeners will want to know more about it at some point.
Sure. I'll be happy to talk about it.
I know you will. All right. All right. Thanks, everyone. Have a great new year, and we will be back at you soon before you know it.
Thank you for listening to the Brain Language Podcast. Please subscribe to our show on iTunes or your favorite listening platform to keep up with our newest episode. Be sure to visit our website, www.nlptrainingconcepts.com, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and Twitter by searching NLP Training Concepts to keep up with free resources, upcoming training, and fantastic content. Thank you for joining us and taking our minds to the next level. We'll see you next time.